Hello there, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Socey. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which you can check out, filmsociology.tumblr.com. The voice who normally says that is Kobe Slagle. He is not here. He is on global travels. He's checking all of the national and international offices of film sociology. But I am not alone. I have company this week, and, well, you should know this. Except I have to actually turn this on in order for it to play. Here we go.
Lawrence of Arabia. He's an English guy. He came to fight the Turkish.
Okay, Clark, right there. That's what I'm talking about. Lawrence of Arabia doesn't have any lyrics to it. Doesn't have any words.
What do you mean doesn't have lyrics?
It's music. It's music.
Hey, I've seen the movie four times.
And there were no words to it.
What are you
doing? There are no words to that. Did you hear what I was singing earlier?
Somewhere I know that somebody, I think, wrote lyrics to this song.
That means Mike Perry is in the house. How are you, Mike?
Still looking for the lyrics, man. Still looking for the lyrics.
Well, you know what? If you don't have goals, then you have nothing. So that's all right. But I'm glad to have him here. We're going to catch up on, we have several dead people we like because we don't have time for dead people we don't like. Last week's show, a lot of fun. But there were two major movies that came out on DVD and Blu-ray last week that I didn't get a chance to talk about, but we will get to that. And, of course, there's the Horror Hound Convention. There are extra syllables in there for a reason. That is happening this weekend as well. And, of course, here at WFYI, we have Penrod, which is tomorrow. Fingers crossed. Hopefully it will stop raining. So
we will
see about that. But opening in theaters this weekend, some have said the return of director M. Night Shyamalan. There was, of course, remember how much of a huge deal it was to when he came out with his first, with his second film, actually, The Sixth Sense. And he's just never really come close since.
Yeah, he kind of peaked early.
So, actually, it was his third film. And now he is back. He did a couple of, I've heard him talk in press that he was making some kid films. We call those After Earth and The Last Airbender. And but he is back to the spooky genre with The Visit, which is a story of two grandkids, one young boy and a slightly older girl. And by the way, the older girl is making a documentary about visiting the grandparents and their family dynamics. I don't think that's quite brought up in the ad campaign.
No.
So there is a little kind of found footage filming thing, which we've seen before in Cloverfield. You're right there?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the description, not the show, right?
Right.
Okay. And, of course, they go to meet the grandparents, and as the film goes on, it takes a little bit of time before it starts to kick in, is something's not quite right with the grandparents. Is it dementia? Is it possession? Is the house haunted? Are they haunted? Are they psychotic? There's lots to choose from in this picture. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Mike and I have not talked before. We try to keep this as fresh as humanly possible. Yeah. Although Mike gave me one slight hint of what he thought of the film. He saw this for the show. And do you remember what you demanded?
I demanded my $9 back.
There, he wants his $9 back. He's angrier than the paper boy in Better Off Dead. So it sounds like you didn't like it.
No. The short answer is no, I didn't like it. Man, and I wanted to.
Yeah.
Ever since The Sixth Sense, I was an early Shyamalan fan, but Sixth Sense he peaked at, and every movie he's made since then has been a little bit worse than the one before it. And I will admit that maybe he rebounded a little bit with this one.
I would agree with that.
But,
really?
I would still see this before I'd see The Last Airbender.
Well, that should be – well, that kind of sets that bar low. If you're so long as – and I kind of went in going, just be better than the last two films.
I kind of
– and really, I'm sorry, really, not even that. There was also The Happening and Lady in the Water. So if you're better than those
– I was going to mention The Happening, you know, the movie where nothing happens. And – That was my problem with this movie. I kept waiting for something substantial to happen. And except for a couple of gotcha scares that, you know, every horror movie tries to throw in there, just, you know, to throw you off that something's going to happen that
right.
nothing does. I didn't even get startled at anything in this movie.
I wasn't startled, although I had an interesting crowd when I saw it last night. We had some talkers, and that kind of worried me early on. I thought it was going to ruin the experience, but it was interesting to hear them jump at a couple of moments. There were a couple. I thought for me, it's. Okay, I sound like a film snob, where I can say a film is funny without laughing out loud.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like this. I thought there were a few genuine, jump moments that I thought were executed well. Much of the credit for me, I have to give credit to, I had to look up these folks. These are fairly unknown actors, at least to me, but to actress Deanna Dunnigan, who plays Nana, who plays the grandmother.
Yeah, she's the one I had to stay through the credits for because I could have sworn it was Jill Eikenberry all the way
no,
through.
No, not Jill Eikenberry. That would have been cool. But no, she puts in a pretty impressive performance. And this is one of those films, I don't want to give away the ending. It does not follow the old – well, I don't think it does follow the old Shyamalan format. Creepy atmosphere, creepy atmosphere, plot point, creepy atmosphere, plot point, plot twist, credits.
Yeah, you can kind of see the plot twist coming early on in the movie.
If you're paying attention, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he leaves little breadcrumbs all through the movie to get you to where you expect to be at the end. I mean, the twist in this was not a surprise for me.
Not a surprise. And I think this is a film that I have what is called the grindhouse rule because of the film Grindhouse, that there's a lot of films that would probably be a lot better if it were 70 minutes long. I think a 70-minute version of this, a tighter version of this film, I would have really enjoyed. But I still wound up liking it for the most part because of her performance, because of the few genuine moments. And the found footage, the filming of it didn't quite bother me. I think he handles that well as far as the point of view.
That's just the style that's getting old for me.
Fair enough. And I know I think the director, or the, not the director, the producer of this was one of the gents that's involved with the Paranormal Activity, so there is that kind of look to it as well. Then again, I don't see as many scary movies compared to, I guess I get to pick and choose. So
yeah.
I have not been burnt out on it as much as you have, I think.
Like I said, this is not Shyamalan's worst movie.
Not even close.
But if he...
But still,
if it weren't for those two, it would be his worst
or
movie.
Or three, yeah.
I want him to surprise me. And that's what he based his early career on, surprising us with the twist you don't expect. And you think it's one sort of movie until it gets about two-thirds of the way through, and then, you know, he'll change it on you. He didn't do that with this.
Mm-hmm.
The plot twist, like I said, is very predictable if you're paying attention. And I like the kids. The actors who played the kids are great.
Kids are all right. First, I checked. It was Ed Oxenbould who plays Tyler, the young boy who, and I found out he was Alexander in the bad film version of Alexander and the horrible, terrible, no good,
okay.
Very bad day. You had Olivia De Jong, who is Becca, the older sister who's doing the documentary. Films like Polarized, Sisterhood of Night, the TV series Hiding, which I don't watch. Anyway, they were fine. Although the kid has the thing where he won. I don't need suburban white kids rapping.
Right.
And two, the bit where he's going to replace curse words with female singers gets old fast for me.
Yeah, I was surprised to see Catherine Hahn in this movie.
Yes, she plays mom.
She's one of my favorite comedic actresses these days.
And she does not have a comedic performance.
She does not have one in this. Now, her performance is light in this, but, you know, she, without spoiling anything, she's really not in the central action of this movie. She's in some Skyping with the kids, and
right.
She's at the beginning and she's at the end. But when I first saw her, I thought, oh, okay, is this going to be a funny horror movie? I could be in for that.
Uh-huh.
But no, she's gone pretty quickly in the movie, and I kind of missed her, to tell you the truth,
okay.
throughout the rest of it. I think it may have needed some more comedic interludes in it to help adjust the tone a little bit. I mean, once it sets its tone, it's a monotone throughout the entire picture.
And the film is also set up where the kids are supposed to stay there a week, so you get a place card basically saying Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning, Thursday morning. So it should be noted, because I love pointing out those people. I mean, that guy, that lady. Peter McRobbie plays Pop-Pop, and he's been in everything from Lincoln, Spider-Man 2, Brokeback Mountain, 16 Blocks. He's Father Lantum in Daredevil, the series.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys who you know you've seen his face.
Correct.
You couldn't come up with his name if you bet me.
And Deanna Dunnigan, who plays Nana, for the most part, not the most, a working actress. She's a working actress. I have to, but films like Dimension and Losing Isaiah, Men Don't Leave, I'm really going back. She was Sister Rebecca in Running Scared, but she won a Tony for playing the mother in August Osage County.
Wow.
Yeah, that's impressive. In fact, you go to her IMDb page, she's holding her Tony. And there is, and apparently she performed on the first national tour of Children of a Lesser God, as well as the 79 production of Shaw's Man and Superman. So, classically trained actress, and there's a lot of stuff that her character goes through in this film as far as physicality, as far as nudity. She really kind of leaps into the performance.
Yeah, she was game for this film.
She really was game for this film, and you see some of the moments in the trailer, her in the rocking chair and her eating the cookies, and I mean, she really latched onto it. It was pretty impressive for a woman of a certain age to just dive in.
And you mentioned my big pet peeve. I hate it when all the funny parts of a comedy are in the trailer. I also hate it when all the scary parts of a horror film are in the trailer, and they are in this one. If you've seen the trailer, you've seen the meat of the movie. You just need to go back for the filler.
Okay.
And that was. I want him to do another good movie.
We want another home run out of him.
Yeah, and
I get it.
I'm getting to the point where I just don't think it's going to happen. I mean, I went to see The Last Airbender hoping it was going to be some good Shyamalan, but it just wasn't. And
no.
Shyamalan is just, he hasn't lived up to his hype.
So let's review. We go back. 1992, Praying with Anger, which I have to admit I did not see. Wide Awake, that was the one with Rosie O'Donnell's The Nun.
Yeah.
That was
inspired casting.
Inspired casting. Yeah. Sixth Sense, of course. Unbreakable. And I always remembered this about Unbreakable. The first X-Men film ruined Unbreakable for me. because by the way, spoiler alert on a 15-year-old film. Sorry.
Yeah.
But when we see the introduction of Samuel L. Jackson's character, it is exactly like the introduction of Magneto's character in the first X-Men film. And okay. I just went, he's the bad guy. And then it's Bruce Willis whispering for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Signs, I remember actually kind of liking it despite...
I liked it.
Despite, I think all farmers should look like Mel Gibson or Joaquin Phoenix and the whole alien thing. There is one line in Signs that I still quote to this day, and it's Gibson is told, because Gibson doesn't know how to get angry, and Joaquin Phoenix, which is, that's funny, but Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, let's pair those two in the movie now.
Yeah, exactly. But Phoenix says to Gibson's character, just run around and say crazy stuff, and he's turning a house, and Gibson yells, I am insane with anger. I still quote that.
Yes.
I still use that to this day.
And then The Village, it is... I liked it more than most critics did.
Right.
I enjoyed it. I bought into the whole setup to the point where I was really disappointed with the twist.
Okay.
Because it just made everything else pointless to me.
It was kind of almost a cinematic middle finger,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I really liked that cast, and I really enjoyed the atmosphere, yeah, I don't remember seeing the breadcrumbs in that one. I think it was just kind of
that's a case where you didn't see the twist coming. At least I didn't.
Uh-huh.
And then it's just, okay, so
It's all this.
What do they do now?
Right.
I almost want to see a sequel to The Village. Let's see what happens to The Village.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so either. But people keep giving this guy money for some reason.
Yeah, I know. And this Lady in the Water. Again, if I had a movie with Bryce Dallas Howard in water, it wouldn't be this one.
Yep.
The Happening, we've already talked about. Just fall into the mower, please. And then, of course, Last Airbender and After Earth. So ladies and gentlemen, it sounds like we have similar issues with the film, but they didn't bother me nearly as much as Mike.
Yeah.
And it's still better than his last three films.
Yes.
So there's that. So take that for what, again, quotes
take
that are.
Take that glimmer of hope, Knight. Just take that glimmer
quotes
of hope.
That are not going to be in the ad campaign.
Yeah, this
at
one
all.
Didn't suck as much as your last one did.
And we're using that for the quote file. Wow. Okay, so there's that. What else do we have out there? If Kobe were here, we would go to IU Cinema. And, of course, they are knee-deep in their Penelope Spheeris festival going on. She's already spoken. But tonight at 6:30 at IU Cinema is her film Suburbia. And then at 9:30 p.m. from 1998 to the Decline of Western Civilization, Part 3. There was a Part 3. Tomorrow, 6 years, a special screening with Hannah Fidel. And then at 7 o'clock, Saturday, September 12th, from 1992, directed by Penelope Spheeris, Wayne's World.
Wayne's World.
I know that is a much loved film, and I was talking about this off the air about another film, but I wish this film had been made a little sooner.
Yeah,
I have to do my SNL timeline, but a year earlier, 2 years earlier, if possible.
Yeah, when the sketch was really hot.
Yeah. You know, yeah, and I know it takes time to make a movie and financing and blah blah blah, but I was talking about this with I had the same issue with Spaceballs.
Mm-hmm.
Spaceballs came out in 1987. I wish it had come out 3 years before,
yeah.
Or 4 years before. You know, right after Jedi. Sorry, shoot me. Monday, September 14th, directed by Women's Series, Sand Dollars. On Tuesday, the 15th, the 2009 documentary Garbage Dreams. Friday, September 18th, The Outrageous Baron Munchausen. No, it is not the Terry Gilliam. It's from 1962. And wow, 9:30 p.m., Friday, September 18th, the John Waters comedy Female Trouble.
Oh, my.
Not a John Waters fan?
Oh, no, I like John Waters.
Okay, that's happening on campus. That's good. College students, go see that. This is a great time to see John Waters movies is when you are in college.
Mm-hmm.
I have to give much love to Chris Barton and Lila Sneed, who were two of my classmates at Ball State. We were all in the newspaper, the Ball State Daily News, and Chris had John Waters films on VHS. And so I got to discover a lot of those. And then Friday, September 19th at 3 p.m. as a part of the City Lights film series, the Oscar-winning film from 1971, Clute. Jane Fonda and
Donald Sutherland
and Roy Scheider. So directed by Alan Pakula. So that is all happening this week at IU Cinemas. Now we head over to the Tibbs Drive-In. Now I'm trying to remember, was it you that had the weird Dudley Moore double feature at a drive-in? I love talking about odd pairing. It was not you. Maybe it was Brian Hart. Oh, gosh. Anyway, it was somebody. But, you know, we've talked before on the show about odd pairings at drive-ins.
Right.
And somebody saw 10 and Arthur together, which is really odd because it is now, of course, you can't show two-year-old films at the drive-in.
Right.
They're either very new or recent or very vintage. So, anyway, do you remember the oddest pairing you've had at a drive-in?
The last oddest pairing that I've seen at the drive-in was Grease and To Catch a Thief.
That's right. That's weird. That's a weird pairing.
But it was fun.
I'm sure it was.
And I'm not a musicals guy, as you well know. But
those
you
are
know, Grease, I make allowance for.
Those are two. Yeah, I bet. Those are two films that you could see. That sounds like they would be back-to-back Fridays at the IMA.
Yeah.
Not together at a drive-in. Anyway. Okay. At the Tibbs. We have The Perfect Guy, that was the other thriller that opened today, as well as Straight Outta Compton. And by the way, apparently now you can see on Fridays and Saturdays. So Perfect Guy at 8:30, Straight Outta Compton at 10:15, and then at 12:40 they replay The Perfect Guy.
Straight Outta Compton's just premiering today.
No, this has been at the drive-ins, but it's, you know, usually I guess the newest title goes first.
I was going to say it's probably the most memed movie of the year so far.
And ladies and gentlemen, no, I did not do Straight Outta Flint, but my, oh, well, and there was one of Svengoolie, Straight Outta Berwyn, mm-hmm. but for me, the best one was a photo of Jim Kelly about ready to fight Mr. Han in Enter the Dragon, and it was straight out of a comic book. That was my favorite. Do you have a favorite?
No, not really.
But they're out there.
They're out there. There's hundreds of them out there.
Yep. Okay. Second, Screen 2. We have 2-hour rated films. That's really about it. Thrilling, I guess. You have No Escape and The Gift.
The Gift. I haven't seen The Gift yet.
No. I would like to because I like Joel Edgerton, and he also wrote and directed it. So, you know, kudos for him on that. Okay. And then Screen 3, The Visit and Sinister 2. If you need that.
Go late. And maybe, you know, a good 2 hours after the first movie starts.
And then, now this is intriguing, Screen 4, Minions, mm-hmm. then Shaun the Sheep, and then at 11:30 for Friday and Saturday only, Inside Out.
Hmm.
That's a good triple feature.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. So, anyway, that is happening over at the Tibbs. Over at the Skyline, oh my gosh, I just put it out there, so sorry. Let me try again. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
And proving out, once again, he can recall up a page in the time it takes to say that sentence.
You think I'm Gerald Ford. Okay, here we go. Happening over at the Skyline right now, we have, and we have a preview of an event coming up. Vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait a minute. Sorry. Starting at first at 8:30, Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Okay.
So yeah, it's still out there, and I still stand by it. I enjoyed it. At 10:30, Vacation, which Gina liked. And then what they do is the third feature at 12:15 a.m. or later sometimes, they will pick one from out of the archives because somebody has a decent print of it. The original 1974 Gone in 60 Seconds.
Okay.
Lots of real car crashes done by real stunt drivers.
There you go.
Lots of them. More fun than the Nicolas Cage remake, which nobody should ever think about.
No.
Ever.
I wasn't thinking about it until you just mentioned it.
I'm sorry. So anyway, that is happening. There is also, I'm trying to get to, they have an event coming up next weekend, and it's, it is Drive-In Massacre 2015 next weekend on the 18th and the 19th. So they are going to start with, from 1960, The City of the Dead with Patricia Jessel and Christopher Lee. Also known apparently as Horror Hotel. Of course, all these titles have alternate. Then we have City of the Living Dead from 1980 with Christopher George and Carlo De Mejo. And also, apparently the director of this one is going to be at the drive-in. But Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. So that is happening. Yes, Jessica Chamberlain and Heather Dorff will be at the drive-in as well. That's a special screening. Oh, there's a special screening of that on Thursday the 10th. Movie start at 8:30. And as it says on the website, free autographs and stuff. Nice. So anyway, that is happening there. Also, at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Indiana, this is happening tonight. And it is happening tomorrow night, but they are showing the original Lon Chaney Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, nice.
The 1925 silent movie classic with live score by the Franklin Chamber Players.
Nice.
So that is happening. Apparently, tonight's performance is screening as all ages. Tomorrow's performance, 21 and over only. Okay. Are
they serving alcohol or
something? That's got to be my guess, I'm thinking. So anyway, that is happening. Coming soon to the Art Craft Theater, the 17th and 18th is The Breakfast Club. Well, that's not a movie, but Dancing with the Johnson County Stars. I just read them, folks. Okay. October 2nd and 3rd, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. So that's out there. Also, we have happening this weekend is the Horror Hound Convention, which is happening at the Marriott Indianapolis East. That's on East 21st Street. The big note is Robert Englund's going to be there's a Nightmare on Elm Street reunion. It's Robert Englund and Heather Langenkamp are going to be there. So, and of course, there was a nice piece about Horror Hound Weekend written by Sam Watermeyer in this week's Nouveau. And of course, Wes Craven passing away. May he rest in peace. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite Wes Craven experience?
Well, no.
Thank you.
Not really.
All right, moving on.
I was never a big Freddy fan, so it's...
Okay. But Scream do anything for you?
No.
Last House on the Left?
No.
Red
Scream Eye? Was okay. But mainly because it poked fun at itself.
Through, right. Yeah. Okay, here's my trivia. Can you... And this was... If you heard it last week's show, you got this. The one non-horror film directed by Wes Craven.
I do not know.
First hint, it got an Oscar nomination.
Wow.
Second hint, it got an Oscar nomination for Meryl Streep.
Really?
Yes. Now he's in. Eyebrows have gone up here.
Okay. You got a third clue?
She's a music teacher.
Okay, you lost me with that one.
Music of the Heart.
Okay. I've heard of the movie. I have not seen it.
Well, there you go. Now you can impress the marm and other people with that piece of trivia. That's what we give you here at Film Sociology.
We give you nothing but trivia, folks.
It's a trivial show. So some of the people coming to Horror Hound Weekend, we have Danielle Harris. I can't Google image her at work. Lance Hendrickson is going to be in town. Mm-hmm. Always working guy. Yaphet Kotto.
Yeah.
Like that. James Hong, for you fans of Big Trouble in Little China. A lot of Big Trouble in Little China folk. People, cast members. Peter Kwong, James Pax, Amanda Wiss, Joseph Whipp, Ronnie Blakely. Who I always is so funny because occasionally you come across somebody who's known for predominantly horror films, but I don't think of him or her that way.
Yeah.
Of course, she was in Nightmare on Elm Street, Return to Salem's Lot, but I always remember her from Robert Altman's Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that experience. I've been to one of these. Somebody gave me, one of the festival people gave me passes, which I always appreciate. And if you've never been to one of these, go. They're a lot of fun. I mean, it's wall-to-wall people in costumes, and it always cracks me up when I see a baby carriage being pushed by, two people in, Freddy Krueger shirts and get up. That's kind of cool. And I remember Sid Haig was there. I got to meet him. And Tom Atkins, another guy who's, yes, he did Halloween 3, but he also did Lethal Weapon and a lot of other things. But the one I always remember I was really excited about seeing, and nobody was bothering him at the time, was Andrew Robinson.
Yes.
And so now why he's there, of course, he was in the first Hellraiser. He did some Star Trek.
He did Deep
Next
Space
Generation?
Nine.
Deep Space Nine, sorry. Of course, he was Scorpio in Dirty Harry. And
punk?
Yeah, that's right. So he was in that. And I went up to him and I introduced myself. I had the film show. He teaches acting. He teaches acting at a college in California. I still should try to get him on the show someday. But I remember saying to him, no photos of Liberace to sign. And he signed a chuckle and went, nah, not this crowd. He played Liberace in a TV movie, which I actually remember seeing. And he was quite good.
Yes, he was.
And he was also in Charlie Varrick with Walter Matthau. Mm-hmm. So anyway, and lots of women that I grew up watching a lot of on TV and cable. And I've probably seen more of them than I've seen some girlfriends. So, thanks for that. Let's see, Nick Corey, Mimi Craven, Mark Patton, Kim Myers, Marshall Bell, Joanne Willette, Jennifer Rubin, Ira Hayden, Rodney Eastman, Lisa Wilcox, Bradley Gregg, Ken Sajos, hope I'm saying that right, Andrus Jones, Michael Bailey Smith, Kelly Jo Minter, can't Google image her. Sean Greenblatt, Ricky Dean Logan, Robert Brian Wilson. Of the Silent Night, Deadly Night series. Brian Usna, Jonathan Tayerstein, and Bobby. Oh, gosh, yeah. London May, Johnny Kelly, Steve Zing. So lots of artists. Anyway, lots of people out there that's going to be attending this event. So you can go check that out. And, of course, there's always cancellations. Always. Because this it happens. Work happens. Life happens. Check doesn't happen.
Right.
So, you know, so canceled due to work, David Arquette. That's a shame.
Okay.
Anyway, Horror Hound Weekend, September today through the 13th at the Marriott Indianapolis East. Go check that out. All right. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to get to some titles on DVD and Blu-ray. We have Dead People We Like, including Audio Tribute, and it's a great film. Even though the two of the people we're talking about, mostly known for television, but I always like to see what movies they did because that's what I do here. Anyway, and Mike Perry's hanging out, and I love that he does. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Connie Nielsen. I am on Film Sociology at WFYI Indianapolis.
Hey, this is Doug Jones, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI.
Hi, I'm F. Murray Abraham. You're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis.
Hello, I'm Nicholas Smith. You're listening to Film Sociology.
Hi, I'm Robert Irvine, and you're listening to Film Sociology, WFI in Indianapolis.
This is Sammy Terry being terrorized with you with Film Sociology. Have many pleasant nightmares.
This is Peter Bogdanovich, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Radio.
My name is Angelo Pizzo, and I'm listening to Film Sociology.
Hi, I'm Netta Ulibi, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis.
Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
Hey, everyone. This is Tommy Wiseau, and you're listening now to Film Sociology at the WFYI Indianapolis.
Doesn't like a little self-indulgent production there.
Elmore Leonard, man, that's cool.
Oh yeah, that's my favorite because he's like Geppetto.
Yeah.
He deemed us a real show, therefore we are. So always love it. Thank you, Dutch, and everybody who gives me show ideas. It just makes me giddy. Anyway, this is what happens when Kobe's not producing. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Socey. Hanging out with Mike Perry, just keeping you guys up to date on all the nonsense that's going on. There's plenty of stuff to see in central Indiana, whether it's conventions or a horror movie, which you may or may not like. Apparently, we are split on that. But there's plenty to choose from as far as art, craft, and the drive-ins. I'm trying to remember, do drive-ins stay open when it rains?
I believe they do, unless it's pouring
or lightning, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, look out for that.
And you saw Twister, right? They don't shut down in the middle of a tornado.
That is actually true. Well, before we get to the titles on DVD and Blu-ray, there's a couple of movie news items I picked up from last week. One that I'm really intrigued, and I didn't know existed until this happened, but apparently in 1972, director Sidney Pollack, may he rest in peace, had made a documentary about the making of Aretha Franklin's album Amazing Grace. And according to stories, was that he had filmed her recording the album, and originally there was some problems with the sound, that it didn't mesh up. And then over time, it finally got taken care of. But apparently, Aretha Franklin today has been trying to put a kibosh on this documentary being released. It's already been pulled from two film festivals, Toronto and Telluride. And we have no reason, we have no idea why. But the fact that Pollack was trying to make this, he had just come off his first Oscar nomination for, remember one of his first, They Shoot Horses, Don't They?
Okay.
By the way, date film. Just a wonderfully depressing film about a dance marathon during the Depression. Got an Oscar nomination or an Oscar Academy Award for Gig Young.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Sarenson.
Yeah.
Michael Sarenson, Jane Fonda. And this was like Jane Fonda's big dramatic turn from being an ingenue in the 60s. Bonnie Bedelia's in it, Bruce Dern, Red Buttons. Anyway, so he was going to follow that up with making this documentary because music documentaries were hot. You had Gimme Shelter, Woodstock, Elvis, That's the Way It Is. And basically they filmed it. And it's kind of a puzzle as to why the film in August of 72, Warner Brothers officially wrote off and shelved the movie, but they didn't really say why. So that's kind of weird. And then Pollack moved on to The Way We Were. Okay. So anyway,
he bounced back anyway.
Yeah, he bounced back pretty good, especially if you're making a film and it gets shelved, not good. So anyway, it's just intriguing to see what happened. Now I really want to see it. It's kind of like the day the clown cried. So I guess I could say Aretha Franklin, thanks. and this really needs no setup. Where did I get this? newnownext.com. Nebraska man duct tapes girlfriend's kids to chairs, forcing them to watch Mommy Dearest.
No! That's cruel.
According to
so many levels.
Yeah, because the kids can't drink. According to the Hollywood Reporter, 29-year-old Glenn Oliver was asked by the boy's mother, his girlfriend, to look after them while she worked Sunday. In court documents, Oliver claimed she told him the boys had to watch the movie. When the boys ages 4 and 6 wouldn't listen and refused to watch the movie, Oliver covered their mouths with duct tape and then used it to shackle their wrists, chests, ankles, and heads to the chairs. Wow.
That's an overreaction.
That's a slight overreaction. And
oh, man.
Why that film?
I don't know, but it probably scared the kids to death.
The boys, including a third child who was not duct tape, who probably wanted to watch the film willingly, were discovered by a neighbor who frequently visits the residence. She was able to calmly lead the boys out of the house by asking Oliver if they could come with her to help her clean her home.
Way to go, Mrs. Kravitz.
No kidding. Nice reference there. Nice Bewitched reference. Oliver reportedly told an officer who responded to the scene that he didn't think, didn't think it was that big of a deal. Unquote.
My God, it scares me to this day.
THR reports that, according to Murray, the duct tape was very tight on the youngest of the boys, and in his opinion, the child could have been at risk for positional asphyxia.
Man.
Bond set at $50,000, appear in court on September 21st. You know, I kind of force my films on my family from time to time, but I kind of know where the line's drawn on that. I think
duct tape is the line.
Duct tape. Well, no, but way before duct tape, I think. Please, maybe. I think you would like this, and that's about it.
Okay.
But wow, that's rough.
Just wasn't taking no for an answer.
Apparently not. And but again, why that film?
I don't know.
I know it is a camp classic, and yes, the children cannot, but you really need a few cocktails in you before watching Mommy Dearest. It really helps.
Yeah, but, it sure doesn't hurt.
No, it sure as hell doesn't hurt. So, anyway, that's out there. That's weird.
Man.
That's odd. Thousands of films, but not that one. Okay, so speaking of films, it is a film show. New on DVD this week, we have two new titles, and then there's two titles I want to talk about from last week we didn't get a chance to discuss. But the big one is Disney's Cinderella, directed by Sir Kenneth Branagh.
Mm-hmm.
And have you seen it? Did you see that?
No,
one?
I have not.
Marm had no interest in it?
My child's grown up, and, well, my niece is... Or our niece is well into her teens now. So it's
just off the radar. Okay.
Yeah. I think Frozen was her last hurrah there.
Wow. That was kind of Emma's. Well, I always talk about Frozen was the big turnaround. This was when Emma became the little hipster, you know. and it was, you know, she liked the film. But I think the problem was the rest of the planet loved the film.
Yeah.
And the song, of course, got played to death. So and then she started to say that... you know, she thought Ernest and Celestine should have won Best Feature Film over Frozen.
And, of course, you told her to just let it go.
No, I didn't. Oh. And then we saw Idina Menzel in concert and went, honey, this is the only time you need to hear the song. It's directly from the source. And, you know, you have to hear it. Anyway, so now, because of this, the film was, you know, hugely successful. And now, of course, they're going to make a live-action version of Beauty and the Beast. So this is happening. Anyway, the film is cute. It's it's good, not great. It looks like a fairy tale. There's a lot of CG work by Sir Ken.
Right.
I think Emma and I were the same way. And yes, Emma actually wound up watching this with me. The older actors fared better than the younger actors. You have a young Lily James who plays Cinderella.
From Downton Abbey.
And, of course, the other thing I noticed, she was Karina in Wrath of the Titans, if you're into that sort of thing. You know, pretty, stick, little, mm-hmm. you know, little stiff. My wife thought there was some warmth to her, and I'm not the actor of the group she is. Richard Madden plays the prince.
Game of Thrones.
Again, same thing. You know, they work well together. It's fine. You know, the real fun performance is where Kate Blanchett gets to vamp it up as mm-hmm. the evil stepmother. And you get a goofy, non-Tim Burton performance from Helena Bonham Carter as the fairy godmother.
What strikes me about Cinderella, and I have not seen this movie.
Right.
But I have seen the commercials for the DVDs. And
to death.
If you... didn't know what the story was, you would not know what the story was. About the only thing I remember from the marketing campaign is her at the ball dancing with
because they're tailoring to the princess crowd.
Yeah.
So it visually looks great. It's very, you know, the way the coach and the pumpkins and the mice and the lizards mm-hmm. and the goose all turn into what they're supposed to work on. That's fun. Okay. Ben Chaplin plays Ella's father, and I was trying to explain to Lynn, I'm like, it's almost been 20 years since The Truth About Cats and Dogs. Picture that. Rob Brydon has a nice cameo in this as a painter. The king, of course, is Derek Jacobi.
Why?
Well, he's one of Ken's regular players. Yes, I called him Ken. Stellan Skarsgård is in this as the Duke. I mean, it's a fun, it's not groundbreaking. It's a lot of fun. Is it everyone's favorite Cinderella? Maybe if you're under the age of 8, but it's a live action princess story, and it's fun.
Cool.
So that's out there. I think if your girl is too young or too old for Cinderella, you could try Age of Adeline, which is also out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. With the visually stunning Blake Lively. And this is the story of a woman. It sounds like, and you know, the ad campaign makes it look like a Nicholas Sparks movie
right.
or The Time Traveler's Wife. And it's a woman who doesn't age due to a car accident and lightning. And she becomes ageless. And for some, Blake Lively
okay, now,
is ageless.
Don't any of you ladies try to create an accident during the storm this evening.
Yeah, please
evening,
don't
please.
Do that. Don't do
please.
That. Anyway, and it's her traveling through, you know, her staying the same, her daughter eventually turning into Ellen Burstyn, and her meeting a guy who she has strong feelings for but cannot tell her secret. And so it's kind of, you know, lightweight. It's fine. It's not too overly sappy. And then we get to the second half of the film where they go to meet his parents, played by Kathy Baker and Harrison Ford. Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm happy to say Harrison Ford cared about making this movie. Maybe because he didn't have to carry it, but there is a connection between the Harrison Ford character and the Blake Lively character. And we went through this before. We had to go back to Air Force One to see the last time that we saw Harrison Ford actually not sleepwalk through something. And he's quite good in this.
There was a film from a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember the name of it, but I did see it in the theater where he plays a CEO. He shaved his head for the part.
Oh,
I was impressed by his performance in that because it was a role that we had not seen him in before.
It was
kind of like the heavy in this.
No, I do remember this. It was Paranoia.
Yeah,
because it was the reunion with him and Gary Oldman.
Right.
The Air Force One reunion. Yeah, I didn't care for that one. Oh, yeah, no, to be fair, I guess, yeah, he cared about being Branch Rickey in 42. All right, I take that. Anyway, but he's good in this. I mean, as Chris Lloyd said, it was like, okay, young people. He didn't actually say this, but symbolically, all right, young people, yeah, you're good. Let me show you how a movie star does this. Playing the dad with the secret. Anyway, it's smart about its timeline as far as the gimmick of why she doesn't age. It's not about her being chased by the. There is a little bit where she's supposed to be sought after by the government for experiments, but it makes a mention of it and it goes away. It's about the relationships between men and women. That part I liked. So yeah. Surprisingly better than I thought it would be.
Just referring back to your description. I wonder why it would be a problem if she didn't tell any of her suitors about her condition.
Right.
Because if your wife looks stunningly beautiful for 20, 30, 40 years, are you really going to care at that point?
No.
No.
No, dear.
No.
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 So there's that.
I'll be all for it.
So those are the two that are out this week. Last week, of course, still my best pick for film of the year. And granted, it's September. Mad Max Fury Road. I want to rent it again. I want to show it to my family. I want to see if they just CG'd the crazy people swinging. So, but go see that and then sit as close to the TV as possible. I'm a parent saying this.
I love how they stepped Charlize Theron to like headline status.
Yep.
in the DVD marketing.
Yeah, because
it's like Tom Hardy's in this movie.
Yeah,
too.
And I thought it's a really admirable thing because Tom Hardy is, I think somebody referred to it as a silent movie performance. He says, I mean, he's like Eastwood quiet. Mm. And the fact that he was willing to do this, and it is a girl power film. It's not just Charlize. There's the other wonderful Australian women that are in this, but it's a lot of fun. So that go check that out. The other film that I got to see that I'm really glad I did because it's for mature audiences, meaning of older people. Mm-hmm. But it's a well done, not condescending look at older characters, and it's called "I'll See You in My Dreams." Yep. With Blythe Danner playing a 20-year widow, whose dog just died, and she winds up meeting a man at the same time, played by Sam Elliott. And I believe this is the first time that they've worked together, because I was saying earlier, I would like to have watched them smooch in 1975, and it was still fun to watch them make out in this movie.
Yeah, Sam Elliott's one of my favorites. Granted, this was a date night movie for us.
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
But the mom absolutely loved this movie. She plans to get the DVD. And I enjoyed it. The four women who are in it are just
Rhea
delightful
Perlman,
together.
Rhea Perlman, Mary Kay Place, and June Squibb.
Yeah.
And the one part that I was like, because I guess when they try the medicinal marijuana,
yeah,
that kind of that almost goes into dumb comedy movie mode. But that scene is handled well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so really nice chemistry between the two of them. I've had a special place in my heart for Blythe Danner for a long time, and I'm glad she had to do a starring vehicle like this.
It's a great date movie.
It absolutely is.
I mean, I'm not a big rom-com fan. I did enjoy this, and Sam Elliott is a is a very good romantic lead in this.
He can do more than just be old coots and be in Westerns.
Right. He's more than a cowboy in this picture, although he does still give off that cowboy vibe in it.
Of course he does.
But him as a romantic lead, yeah, okay, I'm buying that. Let's see what happens here. And it was a very good movie. We enjoyed it.
Yep. And let's never forget, I think he's still married to Catherine Ross.
He is.
Way to go, big shooter.
Yeah, I read he was an extra in
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and that's where they met. All right, we're getting kind of short on time. We have Dead People We Like because we don't have time for Dead People We Don't Like. Judy Carne. Thanks, Judy.
Sakatumi.
I know. But she was also in The Americanization of Emily and All the Right Noises. I
remember her from Love on a Rooftop. That was the first thing I remember seeing her in.
Dickie Moore, who gave Shirley Temple her first screen kiss when she was 14 in Miss Annie Rooney. Also appeared in films later like Member of the Wedding, Eight Iron Men, Out of the Past, great film with Robert Mitchum. He played George York in Sergeant York. Also was Oliver Twist in the 1933 film version of that. But I want to finish the show with a tribute to Martin Milner. We know him from, of course, Route 66 and Adam 12. But here's a clip of him playing Steve Dallas, the jazz guitarist, in Sweet Smell of Success.
Frank thought I shouldn't come here, but I thought... Excuse me, Steve. I said, namely, you shouldn't go around wild blaming people without justification. I thought you might have a faint idea how that item originated.
Why me?
Why not you?
What? Oh, that's your idea logic, huh? I go to the judge and I say I didn't murder the man, but the judge says to me, why not you?
Look, there's only two men in this town that could be responsible for that smear. You or Hunsecker or both.
Hunsecker and Elwell are enemies to the knife. So how do you get him doing JJ a favor?
It is a favor, isn't it?
Dallas, your mouth is as big as a basket and twice as empty. I don't like you, period. But neither do I go along with this column saying you smoke marijuana and belong with the Reds. Also, since we're talking repulsive, JJ won't like this for 2 cents. Don't give me that look, Dallas. JJ believes in fair play. And secondly, this could splatter his sister with rotten egg by implication. You're the boyfriend.
You're talking very fast.
Well, I'll tell you what. Excuse me for breathing, will you? How do you like this stupid banjo player? He comes into my office.
Look,
boys,
this gets nobody nowhere. You're overexcited, Steve.
Frank, don't apologize for
excited me. And with good reason, I wanted to say. This endangers the future of the whole quintet.
Should I cry?
People catch on very quick to such an item. Van Cleve already called me. He's firing the quintet.
So what are you doing here? Go over there and fight. Look, if Van Cleve fires your boy, that'll give that liar ring of truth.
I want to speak to Miss Hunsecker, please.
Hello?
Susie, this is Steve.
Steve.
Now, don't be alarmed, but I want you to take a look at Elwell's column in the Record. Today. Now, it's about me. A smear.
A smear? What kind of a smear?
Where are you?
We're on our way to the Elysian to dicker with Van Cleve. He's fired us already. Look, I'll call you later, dear. Goodbye.
You look lovely, dear.
Steve, you've met my brother?
Of course. Yes. Frank? Well, son, looks like you went out and got a packet of trouble for yourself. Hmm?
You've been very kind about it, Mr. Hunsecker.
Ah, give Susie credit for that. I took her word there was nothing to the smear. As a matter of fact, I'll have plenty to say about smears on my show today. And that's why I'd like your personal assurance, too.
Mr. Hunsecker, there is nothing to the smear. You have my sincere word.
I'll buy that. Now, you do me a favor. Be good to my kid sister.
Yeah, she's had a lot of trouble for a kid.
Susie has her girlish secrets. But in her heart of hearts, I imagine, Dallas, she fancies you in an uncommon way. Now, how about you? Not just, not just Tom canning around, I hope.
J.J. Steve is
now,
not...
Now, take it easy, Susie. Steve wouldn't be much of a man if he didn't understand my concern, now, would you?
No, I wouldn't.
Serious as a deacon. I like it. I like it fine. In a world of old rags and bones, I like it. Now, you take Sydney here. If Sydney ever got anywhere near Susie, I'd take a baseball bat, break it over his head.
Hey, Joe, bring us over here.
Sydney lives so much in Marl twilight that when I told him you were coming here today, he predicted disaster. Said you wouldn't take my favor. He said you'd chew up the job and spit it right back in my face. Any truth in that?
Since you bring it up, Mr. Hunsiger. And now, if I can amplify.
Don't amplify.
Steve would like to thank you for this favor.
You don't listen very good, do you, Frank? JJ just said to keep your mouth shut.
Look, don't you think it's about time you shut yours?
I didn't hear you.
Who are you to tell a man like Frank D'Angelo?
Look,
shut up.
Steve, this isn't important.
Does he have to be here?
Why? Has he bothered you before?
Is it news to you?
Well, now, look, son, a lot of people tell me I'm a very gifted man. But I still can't see around corners. Now, just what exactly are you so hot about? I mean, I know it's a difficult thing to be an artist in this crudest of all possible worlds, but...
Look, I'm not here as an artist. I'm here as an average Joe who happens to love your sister.
Well, just be careful you don't knock her off her feet, hmm?
Danny, move it to your right a little bit.
Now, frankly, son, I lost you on that last hill. Just give us the punchline.
Steve. There's no punchline. Yeah, I was just admiring your know-how. Yours and Falco's.
Why do you keep coupling me with Falco?
Why is he here? Tell me, Cyril. When he dies, do you think he'll go to the dog and cat heaven?
Look, let's forget about dogs and cats and all that pseudo-literary junk. I'm gonna lay it right on the line. What about that ruckus in my office this afternoon?
You were there, Frank. We're recording the St. Dallas here. JJ was responsible for the Elwell smear.
Now, don't go wild, sir.
Wild? Take a look at them and tell me who's wild.
Well, what about it?
Well, Steve was overexcited. He didn't mean
well,
exactly...
how did you mean it?
JJ, look, I was in my...
Quiet, all of you. Susie, sit down. This requires investigation. Well, how did you mean it? Well, come on, come on. I'm waiting.
Look, I don't take kindly to you and Falco teaching me ethics. Who's the injured party here? You?
Right now, you have no right to ask questions. And your snide river...
Wait a minute. I haven't handed over punishing privileges to you yet. Just lay the whip down. Maybe I'll respect what you're saying.
Steve. Shut up. Susie, did you know about this accusation?
No.
Before you leave, son, I'll answer your question. Susan Hunsker's the injured party here. Or perhaps next you'll be telling me I don't have my sister's welfare at heart.
Mr. Hunsaker, you've got more twists than a barrel of pretzels.
Did you hear that, Susie? Continue, please.
Well, I can't cope with them, that's all. You're too shrewd for me, so I'll just be honest. Susie and I are in love. We want to get married.
Give him credit. The boy's gall is gorgeous.
Why don't we hear what Susie has to say?
That's stout of you, Dallas, but... Perhaps Susie may not care to air her views in public.
Susie?
Susie, as always, is free to say anything she wants. Go on, dear. Say exactly what's on your mind, dear.
Those dears sound like daggers. Why don't you stop daring her to speak?
What is this? What are you trying to do?
I'm trying to get Susie to stand up to you, but your manner is so threatening she's afraid to speak.
Son, you raise your voice once more.
Please, stop. JJ, can't
I'm sorry, Susie. Well, son, it looks like we may have to call this game on account of darkness. If looks could kill, I'd be dead.
No, I don't care about you. My whole interest, if it's not too late, is in Susie. And how to undo what you've done to her.
And what have I done to her except not buy her a new fur coat lately? You were right, Sidney. This boy is a dilly.
Why? Because I don't like the way you toy with people? Your contempt and malice? I'm sorry, Frank. You think about yourself and about your column. To you, you're some kind of a national glory. But to me and a lot of people like me, your slimy scandal and your phony patriotics, to me, Mr. Hunsaker, you're a national disgrace.
Son, I don't relish shooting mosquitoes with elephant guns. Suppose you just shuffle along and call it a day.
But my day with Susie isn't over yet.
Here's your head. What's your hurry?
Salute to Martin Milner from Sweet Smell of Success. You had a note about Martin Milner films. Yeah.
He was in two of my favorite John Wayne movies. He was in Sands of Iwo Jima.
Yep.
And then Operation Pacific, which
is
another movie John Wayne made with Patricia Neal and Ward Bond and, you know.
The Usual Suspects.
Yes. But he played, you know, the kid in the platoon.
Yes.
Or the kid on the boat, depending.
As always. He was also in Halls of Montezuma. He was the shore patrol officer in Mr. Roberts. Francis in the Navy. Gunfight at the OK Corral as James Earp. Of course, Compulsion, The Original 13 Ghosts, Sex Kittens Go to College. I didn't write it. Ski Fever, Valley of the Dolls, mm-hmm. Three Guns for Texas, 1975 Swiss Family Robinson.
And he was... The whole Big Kahuna thing. He was the Big Kahuna
in an episode of Gidget with Sally Field. Yeah. So Marty,
and that's after Route 66. So.
And you're a big Route 66 guy.
Oh yeah.
So, wow. Well, there we go, ladies and gentlemen. Words to live by: Soylent Green is people. Zard has spoken. Kobe, we miss you. Mike, thanks for hanging out, man. Yeah, I really appreciate it. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Good night, California. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, Michigan.
Turn it off. Turn it off. Turn it off!
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
It's also an art film.